honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, and my favorite kind of episode, when we have the joy of sharing a positive update about a veteran we've featured here in the past. In this case, it was 7 years ago that Royce Williams, talking to us at a weekly gathering of a group called the Old Bold Pilots in Oceanside, California, told us the story that he had had to keep secret for more than 50 years. This last week, that story made its way all around the world as Williams was belatedly awarded the Navy Cross for his heroics in an aerial mismatch. We just heard him describe as David against seven Goliaths. Secrecy was required back in 1952 because of the potential far-reaching implications of an American-Soviet engagement, and also because of the secret surveillance being carried out by the fledgling National Security Agency, the NSA. It's likely the story would have never been told, not even here in 2023, if Royce hadn't survived a very dangerous high-speed crash landing when he brought his significantly damaged jet back to the carrier.
About the landing, you said you had the elevator and that was it. You've got no rudder. Your plane is damaged. Obviously, you're out of ammunition. You can't defend yourself. Where did you have to bring it down, and how did that all unfold?
Well, I was now being guided to the task force by the Combat Information Center controller, and I, on my own, flew on down. I knew the base of the clouds were 400 feet, so I just settled on down under it. And I was thinking all along that something might just really go wrong and I'm going to have to eject out of the airplane. But once I got below 1,200 feet, I didn't have the capability to eject safely anymore. So I was pretty much committed, either that or ditch the airplane. But in the terrible storm that was going on, I would not have survived that. Besides, this was November and the temperature of the water was so low. Even though I was in an immersion suit, I probably wouldn't survive more than 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I was committed, and I had to use emergency systems to get the tail hook down and the landing gear down. And I didn't know what speed I could fly at, so I was testing it while I had time. And I found that below 170 knots, that's probably about 190 miles an hour, the airplane would stall, and I had to come in hot, much faster than we normally do. But I couldn't guide the airplane to be exacting as required for a carrier landing. Incidentally, I was shot at by our own ships when I came in because they were ready to fight. The battle was on for them, and I hadn't been identified as a friendly, but that was brief.
Just what you need after everything you've been through, seven MiGs shooting at you, and then your guys are shooting at you.
Yeah. And I couldn't line up with the carrier. I got pointed at it when it was into the wind, but I couldn't. This was a straight deck before we went to angle decks. Mm-hmm. So I had to line up right on down the deck, and I couldn't do it. I could aim at the airplane, but I probably would have just, if I hit the airplane, the deck at all, probably bounced off and gone over the side. But the commanding officer of the ship at the last moment turned it and lined it up with me, and I ended up with more or less a normal landing.
More or less a normal landing after all that.
Yeah.
And then you said afterwards is when it really sank in for you. Have you ever met another pilot who shot down four Russian planes in a day?
There aren't any American pilots who have shot down four jets ever on one mission.
You're the only one?
Only one. The Air Force, in its total commitment to fighting the MiGs with an F-86 Sabre, equal or better airplane in some regards, and the most they ever shot down in one mission was two. And this is after they've been fighting him and into all kinds of experience. And there were six of them that got two in one mission out of all that. And it wasn't their first mission by far.
So here, you're the only pilot that's ever done what you've done, but you have to keep it a secret for a half century. Was that difficult or no big deal for you?
I learned to live with it. And it was initially because in our squadron, we have camaraderie and so forth, and we're all busy fighting the war, and we're going back to doing the defense of our troops and so forth. And I never talked about it because when I was cautioned not to say what I knew, the only way I could avoid it was just don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. So I didn't. you know, and it was kind of hard being in there, it being sort of a centerpiece of our deployment, and hush, hush. Now, people kind of look at me strange and say, I guess, you know, why is he so closed mouth?
And how long did you stay in the Navy?
Well, I went on to physical disability retirement in 1970, late 75, almost 76. And then I got recalled. I eventually got my regular retirement in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
It was 1942, stint with Minnesota Guard. And then from 43 to 80 in the Navy. And then after I retired, I got recalled one more time to go out as a Commodore of a task force for training.
During the Vietnam War, what were you up to?
I was a wing commander on the Kitty Hawk. I was flying F-4 Phantoms and A-4 Skyhawks.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of interesting experiences there as well. And the second tour, because of injuries and stuff I had from a plane crash one time, they limited me from some of the medications they were authorized, and going from 5.5 grains of thyroid a day down to none, I was losing my hair and tired. And when they realized the mistake and that, they sent me orders that you're authorized for command at sea, in combat, in naval aircraft, in command, but not at the actual controls.
Mm.
So I got myself in the school for naval flight officers and went back as a wing commander in the back seat.
You nonchalantly mentioned injuries from a plane crash. Mm-hmm. Most people don't have that experience. Have you had more than one of those experiences, or what's the one you're referring to?
No, the only one that I really crashed, I've had some very interesting. I brought one airplane back with a Phantom with both engines on fire, and loss of power. I had to land an afterburner, which was only one of the kind. But the Phantom was flown around the world by the British and the Aussies and a lot of Americans, and they'd lost 16 airplanes in a row to a double engine fire, and here it happened to me. But they'd always bailed out. I had my backseater eject, but I brought the airplane back, and they found out what caused it and corrected it, and we had no more of that.
And what were the extent of your injuries?
Well, I have 11 vertebrae that aren't right.
Only 11?
Yeah.
So you had your backseater, as you said, eject.
Yes.
You stayed with the airplane just because you thought, hey, if anyone can pull this off, I can, or what?
No, it was because my training... As long as it's flying and I'm able to command it, I stayed with it. I still had the option. If something suddenly happened, I could eject. I didn't want it endangering hospitals and schools and all of that, so I just drove it till I got back aboard the base.
So you started flying as a pilot in World War II, Korea, the Cold War, the Vietnam War. In all that time, did you have a favorite aircraft you flew?
I did, amongst the propeller airplane, the F-8 Bearcat. It had so much power that it was stunning. And then the next thing was in the jets with afterburners. And one of the most exciting airplanes I flew was the F-8 Crusader.
And another question that comes to mind in all that time, and you made reference to growing up in the nuclear age, you're there at Nagasaki after that impact. You're around Nevada when they're testing bombs and out in the Pacific when they're testing. And then you said that later on you had to deal with that in some of your deployments, some of the aircraft that you were involved with. In light of that, do you have some insight that most of us don't as far as how close we came to nuclear weaponry being deployed again?
Well, there were an awful lot of people that were deployed in the same mission, and I suppose the closest we really came to it was the Cuban incident.
Any specific knowledge of that you're aware of?
Well, I was on the East Coast. I was serving in Washington for the Navy, had a promotion plans at the time. And then I went to squadron command of VF-33 on the Enterprise, who were a part of the activities during the Cuban incident.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the pilots had taken part in that.
Is it somewhat amazing to you that we haven't gotten to that point?
Yes.
I guess another thing comes to mind, that the perspective that you have on all these conflicts and the men that you served with through parts of five different decades in the Navy. What are you most proud of, and what are you most thankful for?
Well, I had my sights set on this thing as a kid. It's what I wanted to do, and I guess I'm pretty happy that I did it.
Well, thank you for serving our country, sir. Thank you for telling us a story that wasn't told for a long time and that only you can tell. I got to ask you about this group here, the Old Bold Pilots. What about these gentlemen gets you excited to come?
Well, I guess the legacy, we've all been pretty much through the same thing.
In light of everything you've experienced and you've seen the world at some very tense moments, is there anything that as we look ahead and try to learn lessons from our past, that with all your insight and personal experience, you would like to pass on?
I've seen an awfully lot of change from a kid on the prairie in Dakotas where it was pretty much horse and buggy, especially in the wintertime, to where we have all this electronic stuff, including warfare now. It hasn't changed the world much. There are always wars. There's always danger. It's fought differently. It's just as dangerous, and we depend on good leadership.
And wasn't it heartwarming to see so many leaders there in San Diego to salute Royce Williams as he received that Navy Cross? You can link to video of the entire ceremony at hometownheroesradio.com. The final speaker was Secretary of the Navy, Carlos Del Toro, introduced by the son of a Marine and grandson of a World War II sailor, now the commander of the U.S. Pacific Fleet, Admiral Samuel J. Paparo.
I am a United States Navy flyer. I have dedicated myself to my country. This is our duty. This is our creed. These are our values in U.S. naval aviation. And Royce Williams, sir, when every morning as reveille is blown, as we heave to and trice up our bunks, we pray that we can meet the example of your heroism and your service. It's a tremendous honor for each and every one of us to be a part of today's ceremony, honoring one of the greatest feats in aviation combat history. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's my very great honor to introduce the 78th Secretary of the Navy, himself a career sailor, an entrepreneur, a husband, a father, and a patriot. It's my very great honor to introduce the Honorable Carlos Del Toro, Secretary of the Navy.
Good afternoon, San Diego. It is wonderful to be back here, and I promise you that I will not be long-winded because I know that some of you actually think it's cold here today. It is indeed a pleasure to be back to San Diego, and I say back home because my wife and I served here, actually, when I was an executive officer or a cruiser. And there was many a weekend, actually, where my wife came alone to Balboa Park and to even this museum with my three children while I served out to sea. So it's simply wonderful to be out here today. But before I begin my formal remarks, I got to tell you, Captain Williams, I've been coming to San Diego for 18 months since I've been Secretary of the Navy. I got to tell you, I've never seen a crowd like this coming for any of my other speeches here today. I think they must be here for some very special occasion. Thank you, Admiral Paparo, for those kind words, warm introduction, and for your extraordinary leadership of our Pacific Fleet. And thank you, Congress and ISA, for all the dedication that you've displayed throughout the many months and years that you've been writing letters and calling and supporting for this very important occasion. Thank you for your leadership as well. Commander Kedrick, and all of our distinguished guests, thank you for being here at this San Diego Air and Space Museum, and what a great museum it is to honor a very special moment for a true American hero. Before I continue, I'd like to ask that you indulge me for just one more moment. It's my understanding, actually, that there might be one, if not more, World War II veterans here today, and I'd like to ask that you please stand and be recognized as well, too. Thank you. And I'd also like to ask all our Korean War veterans to please stand and be recognized or put up your hand if you're already standing. As we've heard today, Royce Williams was a lieutenant in the United States Navy when he took the lead of an incredibly critical mission during the Korean War, resulting in the protection of Task Force 77 from enemy attack. Among the many cases that I have reviewed, and believe me, I've reviewed many, Captain Williams's case stood out above all others. It was very clear to me that his actions were truly extraordinary and more closely aligned with the criteria describing higher mettle. That's why a little over a month ago, I had the privilege of visiting Captain Williams in Escondido. And sir, what a tremendous honor it was for me to do that. And to be able to call you and tell you in person that after all these years, your courageous actions on that day would finally get the full recognition that they are due. And now I am so pleased to be back here again to formally bestow upon you the long overdue Navy Cross. But before I do, let me take another brief moment to remind us all that freedom does not come cheap. It comes through the sacrifice of all those who have and continue to serve in today's military. Your actions that day kept you free. They kept your shipmates free in Task Force 77. And indeed, they kept all of us free. Just as it was then, it is incumbent upon all of us today to continue that example and journey so that totalitarians throughout the world clearly understand that America and our allies will never back down in defending freedom around the world. I pray that your example continues to shine brightly as an inspiration to all our currently serving men and women in uniform, as well as the thousands, those who we need to continue joining our ranks today so that we never forget that freedom must always be defended. As a refugee myself, born in a communist country, I simply cannot thank you enough on behalf of your Navy family and all Americans. Now, Captain Williams, will you front and center, please?
And with that, more than 70 years after his seemingly impossible heroics in the air that were kept under wraps for so many of those years, Royce Williams was awarded the Navy Cross. Find video from the ceremony and other related links at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook. And join us again next time when we'll be reminded again through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.